These are the Target Files, taking a 21st century look back at the 20th century adventures of the Doctor in novelization and audiobook form, looking through the eyes of adulthood at our childhood memories. After all, a great Time Lord once said, "There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish some of the time." Doctor Who is strangely concerned about Professor Horner's plan to cut open an ancient barrow near the peaceful English village of Devil's End. Equally worried is Miss Hawthorne, the local white witch, who foretells a terrible disaster if he goes ahead. Determined that the Professor should, is Mr. Magister, the new vicar, in truth the master, whose secret ceremonies are designed to conjure up from out of the barrow a horribly powerful being from a far-off planet. The Brigadier and Joe Grant assist Doctor Who in this exciting confrontation with the forces of black magic. Hello, welcome to Doctor Who Target Files, and this time we are discussing the third Doctor story, Doctor Who and the Demons, novelised by Barry Letts, and the audiobook release also read by the late great Barry Letts. This is Mike in Swansea.
And hello, this is Alex in Exeter.
So, The Demon's Owl, the longest ever Target novel, and I think it does come across that way a bit on the audiobook as well. We'll discuss it in more detail in a moment. What were your general overall thoughts on this third Doctor release?
I think it's a very good book. It's pretty close to the TV episodes as well. I think that's why it's about six episodes in TV form. It's a very sort of detailed book and very... It is quite a big one. It's a mammoth Target book for Target book. But I did enjoy it. I think it's got good depictions of all the characters, you know, the Doctor and Joe and the Master and all the sort of people living in the village and Benton and Mike. They all come over really well, I think. And this whole sort of issue of science versus magic is a big sort of important part of the book, and that sort of shows in an overworld. I think it's a good book, and the very close to the actual, you know, the TV episodes, I think it comes over very well.
Yes, five episodes on TV. Barry Letts wrote it under the alias Guy Leopold back in 1971 when this was first broadcast. But I want to describe it as utterly bonkers owl, but in a very good way. I just think it takes that great sort of British template of the sleepy village and strange goings-on, which has always been a mainstay of several detective series, several horror films and TV anthology series, and Doctor Who.
Yeah, I would agree. It is a completely mad concept. It comes over really well. The whole sort of, you know, sleepy village, it's all full of locals, it's May Day. And this gets done very well in lots of horror as well. And I think it's also been done very comically in things like, you know, the other thing with Nick Courtney and the Scarifiers did a very good parody of the same sort of thing. And I think, you know, it's a good idea. It's a way of isolating the characters, but also sort of having fun with them, I think.
Yes, and as you mentioned at the beginning, the theme of magic versus science. Pretty humorous scene near the beginning where the Doctor has worked on a remote control for Bessie. How do you feel that came across? A lot of humour with Joe, but he also shows moments of great pomposity, Pertwee's Doctor, particularly towards Joe Grant in this book.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, there's a lot of Doctors super clever. There's a lot of, you know, he's just a bubbly blonde, doesn't know anything about science, he's just put upon him. I think that does come up cross quite a bit, unfortunately, in this episode and the book as well. And I think it was getting close, I think, when they had enough of Joe. I think, isn't this the World 2 before the Green Death where they changed the companion?
Quite possibly. I'm not sure if it's in between seasons because Liz Shaw only did 1 year. Caroline John, didn't she? But I think I could be mistaken, listeners, but I believe Katie did 3, so this may be in the middle of those seasons.
I think it's her really at her, you know, high end game in the whole of these episodes. Even though there is a bit of, you know, screaming and doctriness to it, but I still think she's brilliant and I think she's really good. But I think Pertwee can be a bit, you know, what's the point of having a companion throughout these episodes?
That's true, yeah, it can be quite aloof really, can't we? And I was listening to another podcast the other week, Doctor Who based, and they were discussing how the whole attitude towards the Pertwee era changed amongst fans sort of within the 90s when they first identified him as being a bit of a establishment figure. And even though he does have his sort of battles with the Brigadier in these stories and the military element, he does bring about that aloofness, doesn't he?
I think there's a whole thing for the Pertwee era where he knows that he's clever and everybody around him, and he's not trying to show that. When I think there's a little bit with Tom Baker when he's a Wolf unit that comes over as well, but it's just that whole, you know, I'm an alien who's seen more of the world than you have, and like, you're just small to me, really.
Yes, the sort of frustration of the Doctor coming out, isn't it? But it is balanced with a few lighter moments for him throughout the book.
There is comedy as well with this whole sort of demons and, you know, sort of scary village outlook. And I think Pertwee does it well, the whole fact that he thinks magic is just hilarious and it's all be down to science.
Yes, and the counterbalance to that, of course, is the witchcraft element of Miss Hawthorne, a wonderful character throughout.
Oh, most definitely. She is fantastic. She's actually a very... Nobody thinks she's just a dopey white witch who knows nothing about life. She comes over with a very strong character, I think.
Very wise, isn't she? And there's a lovely sort of affectionate, strange relationship with Benton throughout, isn't there? She's got a lot of affection for him.
Definitely, because, you know, he sort of comes over as Benton does, sort of a bluff sort of sergeant character, and she sees him as sort of human and helps him out a lot, I think, for this.
Absolutely, Al. Absolutely, yeah. She's almost seen... She put me in mind of... strange comparison to make, maybe, but sort of Darth Vader before he became a supervillain in the first Star Wars movie. He seemed more of a heretic, really, isn't he?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Sort of, you know, seen as that. I do think it's interesting. I just want to think of the woman who plays the white... What's her?
Damaris Heyman.
Damaris Heyman. And I think it's very interesting that Barry Letts all wanted her to be sort of that sort of witch who was that sort of parochial. And she basically had a meeting with him and went, no, I'm going to play it how I want to play it. And it makes a much stronger character, I think.
Yeah, she's spectacularly strong as a female character for that era.
Oh, most definitely, most definitely. I think she comes over really strong. The whole sort of the fact where, you know, the Master's sort of verge of bodyguard. She said, I don't want to use violence for you, but I will.
She manages to see some pretty horrific things throughout the book, but she retains a great deal of measure amongst all the chaos.
Almost definitely. She sort of sees it all, but is there and able to cope with it, I think. That's how they get through it.
Yeah, one scene that stuck out fairly early on for me is the scene where the policeman is starting to become possessed and picks up the stone, and you think he's going to strike her on the head with it. But he sort of comes to his senses, the
the mind control eases off just in time. And it's a very quick scene in the TV version, but I thought Barry Letts showed great strength in how he wrote the tension in that scene. You know, he described the feelings and the distorted thought process of the police officer as he picks up the stone.
Oh yeah, I really like that scene as well. I think that's why I think the though I really like TV episodes, I think the book is better, because there's a lot of the sort of small action scenes that go past very quickly are really in depth in the book. Like the bit with the is it the motorbike bit where the motorbike's trying to come after the doctor and he manages to get out of the way?
Yes, I was listening to that section earlier, and you definitely get a feel for actually being within the story, don't you? Whereas perhaps you don't, you know, in the sort of quick 30-second camera shot job in the TV version.
Well, I think you feel more in the actual event in the audio, but where it looks very good in the episode, but it doesn't, you know, it's very good for a couple of minutes, but it doesn't have that sort of extra effect, I don't think.
Yes, and moving on to a few other characters. Harry and Alistair Fergus, the BBC Three, funnily enough, it was predicted, but rather different BBC Three from what we ended up with back in 1971. And, yeah, how do they come across to you, sort of the media savvy types within this story, the sort of, I guess, the metropolitan elite go into the sleepy village?
Yeah, they're extremely sort of, you know, typical of their time. They're sort of, oh, it's 60s and this is a small village full of parochials and leaving magic still. So I find them quite funny. And that whole act of, you know, it's trying to be BBC Two, but they call it BBC Three, is quite funny. And the whole bit of Mike is more interested in the rugby than actually watching the sort of dig bit.
Yes, I know, you know, after the bad Welsh stereotype last time, I like to see that Letts did mention that Wales had given England a good beating in the story. Sorry, Al, but
yeah, so I knew you were going to mention that when Mike's on about. I thought, oh yeah, but it's very interesting because it shows more of their character. You know, how he's in this, Mike's in the sport, and you know, he's a typical sort of unit person. I think not interested in the whole sort of witchcraft and dig thing.
Yes, and the whole there's a great bit of comedic expansion in that scene from Letts. In the TV version, you just see Sergeant Benton hanging up the phone to his wife. But he gives a lovely little backstory to the fact that him and his partner wife are entered in some sort of Strictly Come Dancing ballroom competition. And Mike H has a good laugh about that at his expense, because Benton has to call it off, doesn't he?
Yeah, I know. There's some really nice little details like that in the book that don't end up till time in the episodes. It's like, you just wish that bit, because, you know, Mike sort of having to control himself in the book.
Yeah, very amusing moment. And the whole issue of BBC Three got me wondering, you know, what sort of programmes would the BBC Three we have now produce from this village? You know, would we have The Master saying, My Secret Psychopathic Life as a Vicar, perhaps? Can you think of any other titles, Al?
Oh god, that's a very good question. Probably not.
No, I think they'd all be around The Master, wouldn't they? In his various.
They'd all be around The Master. Come, you know, it'd be Come Dine Me, come Vicaring.
Yeah, he's cosplaying best Roger Delgado there, and he just comes across so measured, so laid back. He really is the template, wasn't he? He really was the first Master, and I'd say the original, you might say.
I think so. He is just so sort of smooth and slick as the vicar, and the whole sort of black robe that, you know, so cool on him. And he sort of, those whole bits when he's with, Stephen, having to play up against Stephen Thorne doing Azarel, you know, the demon. And it's just brilliant scenes between the two. And I think, you know, if you didn't have this Master, you wouldn't have anything we've got now, basically.
No, absolutely. You know, Delgado was absolutely superb in the role. And there's that lovely scene where he's bringing out the guilt in everybody when he brings the whole village together, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, for the whole meeting, and manages with sort of hypno techniques to make them all say what they actually really think. It's brilliant.
Yeah, and what does he go in? He says, the gentleman who owns the post office, will they find out about all the money laundering he's doing? And
it's
talks about
so
the gentry,
clever,
doesn't he, with the person who owns all the business in the area. He talks about how he's lauded by the gentry. And but there's that strange line, Letts has filled it out a bit, where he says to a Mr. So-and-so in the crowd, you know, is your wife still at your sister's?
Oh, yeah.
He actually just says that one line in the TV version, but in the book he mentions there's a pretty young thing involved.
Oh, that's it, yeah, saying, you know, something more interesting going on.
Yeah, so, you know, Letts has definitely fleshed this book out, and I'm a big fan of that style, his style of writing.
Yeah, I think it's very enjoyable, because I think all these little bits add more to the sort of understand what's going on, I think.
Professor Horner, how do you feel he came across? I put down he was rather gruff and cynical, but mentions the whole devilish idea of Beltane. On the one hand, he's very aloof and sort of superior, but then when someone mentions the issue of money and him plugging his book, he's all for it, you know, he's all for the cash, really.
Definitely. He's sort of the sort of typical, sort of, you know, meant to be the sort of professional expert you get, you know, like in sort of digs and time team things where he's they're professional, really, he's just there for the money. He doesn't want to be around people, that's what I thought.
Yes, and another character. Actually, I want to bring up a point about him, Mr. Winstanley. I'm trying to find the actor's name, Al, in the cast list here. Mr. Winstanley was somebody called Rollo Gamble. But his mannerisms and even his voice really, really did remind me of the older Brigadier Nick Courtney we saw on the Sarah Jane Adventures. He was so very similar to that characterisation, and I wonder if Nick Courtney subconsciously perhaps watched the demons in some of his era again before he returned to the Sarah Jane Adventures, because he's almost a carbon copy. He could be a relative or a brother.
Yeah, thinking about that, yeah, you're right. There is a sort of mannerism in the later Brigadier we get in sort of Sarah Jane and some of the big finishes that he's in, there's definitely those mannerisms. He must have thought, that's something to keep in mind, knowing Nick Courtney.
And of course, we have to mention the big man with his most famous line. Was it Jenkins, chap with wings, five rounds rapid?
Oh, yeah, it's there. It's where it's brilliantly mentioned that when they're trying to shoot these demons with guns, it's not doing anything.
And I think it was the Zygon invasion or inversion in Peter Capaldi season 9 where his daughter, played by Gemma Redgrave, brought up that line again, didn't she?
Yeah, they did. The lovely Gemma Redgrave put it in sort of in that, definitely as a little reference to it.
This is Alex Gibbon's Doctor Who News Round.
Hello there, this is Alex and this is Hugh's News on the 25th of August. First thing to mention is that Russell T. Davies yesterday accepted a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Edinburgh TV and Film Festival. Rumours are starting to emerge on who might be the new companion with Jodie Whittaker's 13th Doctor. The main rumour that has surfaced this week is that the actor Bradley Walsh, who's been in such things as Coronation Street and Law and Order UK in England, might be the new companion. We'd love to know what you think about that idea. Personally, I think it might be a good one, as he can do comedy and also do serious. So let's see. We also have to announce the sad news that Victor Pemberton, who invented the sonic screwdriver, died this week at the age of 85. He also acted in bit parts in Second Doctor story Moonbase. He also edited The Great Tomb of the Cybermen and was the writer behind the missing episode Fury from the Deep. From BigFinish.com this week, launched yesterday, is The Prisoner Volume 2. This is the second volume of new and old stories reinvented from the British drama The Prisoner. If you've never seen it, it's about a guy who ends up, without knowing it, in a village. It's called The Village, and he's just known as Number 2. It's a brilliant reinterpretation of the original 60s drama, written and directed by Nicholas Briggs. Big Finish have also announced something special coming, which is called Tales from New Earth. These are four stories related to the New Earth that Russell T. Davies invented for the David Tennant era. They will star Anna Hope and Agio Ando, returning from the original stories that involved the cat people and the hospital.
Returning to the demons, Al. Looking at the first cover, first released on the 17th of October, 1974, a Chris Achilleos cover. We have the Pertwee Doctor, pencil drawn, very good shading on one side of his face, which denotes the shadow of Azrael. And you have Bok, the wonderful character up above, the target symbol, regular target symbol. Bottom left, Doctor Who, the Pertwee logo, and the demons in pretty prominent purple. Barry Letts underneath that. Yes, it's a pretty good one, Al. Sticks out for you.
Yeah, that sounds a really nice one. It sort of says everything that's in the book, really.
Yeah, nice little blend to have the Doctor sort of makes him look a bit sort of serious, as he should be in this story, pencil drawn. And then we have the not so vivid, but pretty light colours of green and orangey brown on Azrael's face. And you get Bok in profile, a sort of yellowish green with tendons coming out of Azrael.
Very so nice.
Pretty prominent. I think it would be one that would catch my eye on the shelves there.
Most definitely.
And then we have the audiobook cover, the audiobook released in the last decade, one of the earliest in the range. We just have Azrael looking a bit more like a werewolf, to be honest, with his hands up in the air, tombs behind him, the Paul McGann blue sort of Pertwee-ish logo, and the demons in white. Barry Letts in white, so not so prominent, really, as we said before. No Doctor on that cover.
I think the first one is better than that.
Definitely, Chris Achilleos' is the best out of those two, I think. Excellent work again, as we've said. Sadly, the Doctor Who Experience will be closing in a couple of weeks, but we're hoping to make one last visit there next week, Al, aren't we?
Most definitely. It's and such a shame that's going.
I know they apparently have a few of the Target covers on show there and in the store towards the end, so perhaps we'll bring you a bit of a special from there next week, folks.
Definitely. It's got to be done, because it's such a shame. Hopefully it will go somewhere in London, we can hope.
Yeah, we can only hope that'll happen, folks. Anyhow, Al, on to the audiobook release of The Demons, which is read by the author Barry Letts.
It's an interesting one, because I don't know, like you, because it's extremely long. It's like nearly 6 hours. Did you finish it? I got very close to finishing it, but I found I enjoyed Barry Letts' voice, but I did find that it didn't really... It changed in some ways with different characters, and then I don't know what it was, but they sort of tried ramping up the tension in part for this sort of bit of music, or after a while became a little bit annoying.
Yes, I think it took him a while to get his rhythm and sort of cadence, possibly to do with his age, because he did sound rather frail at the beginning, but I felt he grew into the performance, really. Put some excellent little touches in, a few little, I suppose you could call them yokel accents, but done, you know, caricatures rather than out-and-out stereotypes, which I think were appropriate for this story. Nice little musical motif throughout. The music and sound effects were done by Simon Power on this release. And I did enjoy Barry's reading, Al. I think you mentioned earlier on, before we started recording, about it put you in a slightly sort of sedentary mood. You felt like falling asleep at times.
Yeah, I found it very relaxing. I think it gets better as it goes in. I think the yokel voices are very good. And I thought he didn't do too badly with Mike and Benton. They were good. But I just don't know if he got Joe and the Doctor, really.
Part of very many characters in this story, I felt. Performance by Barry, as you've also mentioned, I also didn't get to the end. Sorry, folks, I only got to chapter 11, so that might affect my scoring a bit. But from what I did hear, it kept my interest throughout, considering how long it was. It was just due to other issues in my life that I couldn't listen to the last two chapters. You know, I'm sort of aware of the ending on TV. I don't think the ending is too different from my memory of reading this book previously.
I know, it's like, no, both of us have had quite busy weeks, so I didn't get the end, but I watched the whole of the DVD, and I think the audiobook is very good. It has some nice things about it. It'd be probably worth at some point this weekend finishing off just to see how it goes.
Yes, talking about what we do know about the ending, Al, how do you feel that came across, certainly in the TV version? You know, that utterly terrifying that utterly terrifying performance of Morris dancing, which has scared people throughout the centuries, of course, in this country.
Well, I'm not surprised. They'll probably get some this weekend. Joy to Morris dancing. Yeah, I think it's a good ending. Well, I know what's in the extras on DVD. I know Terrence Dix wasn't very happy with it. He thought it ended up the right way. Well, I think the whole thing that the way they managed to blow the circuit as well, you know, by the love and devotion of Joe. I think it does work personally.
Absolutely, Alan. This is one of those stories that has inspired us so much in fandom. I think the convention we actually met at, Regenerations, I think Carrie Woodward, who runs it, hello Carrie, if you're listening, was his actual first convention was run in Aldbourn, I think, just a year or two before he got Regenerations due in Swansea, and that's obviously to do with the theme of the fact that Demons was filmed there.
Yeah, most definitely. It's sort of you still the village looks beautiful in it, and I think also hello to Carrie if he's listening. I think the convention scene has definitely used the Demons, and it's been an important thing. One of the ones I went to in Oxford, it was more to do with the revisitation team, who basically recoloured everything. I don't know if you know, but they basically threw the whole of these six episodes in a skip, and the only way we've got now is from the black and white negatives, what we've got the revisitation team recoloured, so that's why it looks so good.
UK show, you'd know it, folks, if you live in the UK. Tomorrow's World used to look at gadgets and future inventions, and they did a 1990s documentary on, I think, was it the Vidfire process it's called, where they sort of, I think they were copies from either Canada or America of certain episodes, and they managed to sort of merge them together to get the colour pattern back, didn't they?
Yeah, they basically took the black and white negatives, and sort of very slowly is where you can do it, of adding colour to them, basically, and that's why it looks quite vivid in some bits.
But saying that, you know, done in the early 90s, so coming up to 30 years ago now, you know, how would it look now? Because we had The Mind of Evil done by a great artist called Stuart Humphreys a few years ago, so perhaps it could be revisited again. Do you think The Demon's Owl, has it had a special edition? I can't remember.
I don't think so, because I think the version I've got, though, is a double disc version. I think it's just the normal version. But it's interesting to see what they're just... I mean, I know we're not going to get it, but I know in America, aren't they doing... the Space Wheel redone.
Oh, the Wheel in Space.
Well, so space, yeah, it's going to be on that new thing called BritBox.
Oh, the new subscription service.
Yeah, it's been found and done like they did with Power of the Daleks.
Hopefully we'll get to see that one way or the other over here. Well, you know, we can't encourage these sort of things, but...
if you can, like I say, if you can get hold of BritBox, we don't encourage, but if you can, it's brilliant for Doctor Who, apparently.
I can't see it not eventually getting a release over here. You know, we know the BBC store, sadly, is going now, but all the recovered and newly animated episodes are on iTunes, aren't they, Amazon, so...
Definitely. Well, apparently BritBox is going to be very good for Doctor Who, apparently.
Excellent news. Keeping it in the public eye there. Brilliant. All over the world. So, Al, shall we move on to the scores overall for The Demons?
Say that I did enjoy The Demons. A very good book it is, and a very, very long book, which is sometimes might have done a bit editing, that's why we might have got through it a bit faster. I did enjoy it. I thought Barry Rett's reading got better as it went on. It did have nice sound effect. DVD is very good. I think there's some really good performances from Pertwee, from Joe, from all the unit team. And I think the special effects were back there are quite impressive. So I think DVD story-wise, I'd probably go in with about an 8. And because I didn't finish it, about a 7.5 for the audiobook.
Yeah, I think I'll just give one overall, Al. I'd say probably an 8.5. Absolutely bonkers, fabulous story. Absolutely bonkers. Puts me in mind of how fast-paced it is on TV, a bit like Inferno. Whereas that's a sort of nuclear base under siege story, this is a classic village under siege story. Yeah, Barry Letts does a... excellent job. Starts off quite slowly, as we said, quite sedentary, but then he really sort of manages to ramp up the tension and keep that pace going, and I'm really have become a fan of his writing, and it'll be interesting to track down any other books he had written. So sorry and sad he only did this as a target one, you know, but I don't think even the great Terence Dix would have done this one any better. He's really expanded well on it. The longest target book. But thoroughly enjoyable overall, Al. Thoroughly enjoyed, yeah. So a pretty strong 8.5 from me.
That's good. I was just splitting the three. If I did it overall, probably 8.5 as well, because it's really good. And I, like you, didn't think it was too long with six episodes. I think it went quite fast, actually, where some stories will have six or eight, take a while to get going. I think this one...
Yeah, I think it was five, wasn't it?
Episode one is really going quite a good pace.
Yeah, I did notice when I was doing the watch through side by side, episode one was sort of chapter three in the book. The end of chapter three was the end of episode
about,
one.
Yeah, it's about three chapters an episode, I'd say, when it's in six episodes. I think it does have a good pace.
Yeah, one character we haven't mentioned as well is Bok, of course. He's a lovely side issue, isn't he? You know, so well played. I'd try and find the name of the person who played him, but there's so much sort of dance and cheekiness, isn't there, in his performance.
Just that one where one minute you look at it and it's a gargoyle, and the next minute it's moving. I think I'll just, you know, for back then, it's just really clever cinematography and really clever model work. And it's just very, very, I like it a lot. I think, you know, if you are a fan of sort of gothic church and gothic buildings, it will freak the living daylights out if you've never seen it before.
Absolutely. I want to find who played Bok.
I know it's coming, but if you didn't know it's coming, it would freak you out.
That was Stanley Mason. He hasn't got a Wikipedia entry of his own, but if any listeners could let us know a little information about him, I thought he gave a very good performance.
Very creepy.
The demon's all done and dusted. I have noticed we're reaching September shortly, so that'll be 10 years since Sarah Jane Adventures began on as a regular series anyway. The pilot was earlier in 2007 January, so shall we eventually do that 10th anniversary special that we were promising last year but didn't have the time to?
I think so. I think that's about right, because then that might give us enough time to do that before doing the Great Tom book, which is coming.
But I think as well, Survival is out fairly soon. Ronan Munro.
Oh yeah, we might have to do them. Certainly, might have to do as that first thing. Survival's out first week of September, isn't it?
Yeah, which is a week or two away now, isn't it? Even sooner.
Next time on the Target Files podcast, we will be discussing the seventh Doctor book, Survival. Read by Lisa Bowman and written by Rona Munro.
Contact the Target Files on Twitter at DW Target Files handle, or search Facebook for the Doctor Who Target Files podcast page. Thanks for listening. Doctor Who Target Files, The Demon's Review, featured Michael Winks and Alexander Gibbons. 12th Doctor Theme, composed originally by Murray Gold. Version for the podcast by YouTube user Vale Mystery, V-A-Y-L-E Mystery. Please do check out their YouTube channel of that name. Newsround, opening and closing theme, composed originally by John Baker and Ted Heath and his orchestra. Midsummer Murders theme, composed originally by Jim Parker. Doctor Who Target Files, The Demon's Review, was recorded in Exeter, Devon, England, and Swansea, Wales, UK, during August 2017.